Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's give it up for the one and only super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Hooray. Hooray.
Love the energy here on a wonderful summer Monday morning. They call me Ben. Noel, I don't know about you, but one of the questions that I get asked so often when I'm traveling around or when I'm speaking to groups is, how did you end up becoming a podcaster? And I don't know about you, man, but I've been doing this long enough that when I'm being honest with people, I just sort of got into it. I just was in the right place at the right time.
Just one day I just kind of started talking and then I just never stopped. And eventually I just put a mic in front of me and other people to kind of talk with. And it became a weird little career, you know? Mm-hmm. That's not true. That's an oversimplification at best. No, I mean, like, you know, my background was in, your background is obviously in lots of things, including writing and theater and performance and all that. But it's just, I think we both found our way through various circuitous paths to this podcast life. But it's, you know, I think sometimes it's easy to sell yourself short and be like, oh, I just stumbled my way into it. But little choices that we've made throughout the years, I think, have led to the natural result of being podcasters. But
yeah,
lucky to have been able to make a go of it. It seems like it's a thing that we can depend on, I suppose. So thanks to all of you.
Thanks to everyone. To you all. Because you're really our bosses. It's funny you mention this because it occurred to me, we were researching today's episode, which is a fun one. It occurred to me that now it's quite possible that there are children, maybe in the audience today, who think, I want to be a podcaster when I grow up, you know? And also, kids, you don't have to wait till you grow up. You can start your own show whenever you would like. We'd love to hear about it. But this is kind of an entry point for us because if you asked many, many people, then you will find that most people are happy with what they're doing, right? Whether it's a career, whether it's their romantic or social situation, they're often happy, but they didn't predict it back in the early days. You know, it's pretty rare for someone to say, yes, I am the world's premier hang glider. And I knew I wanted to be the world's best hang glider guy, lady, person, entity, since I was a wee tyke and saw my first paper airplane. That's really rare, right? Like, do you know anybody who, you know, since they were 6 years old said, I want to be a shoemaker?
No, I mean, well, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis sort of pivoted from acting to shoemaking, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah, it's definitely rare, but man, when it happens, it clicks like that. I'm always really jealous of those people with that level of like forethought, because you know, I've done everything from work in music stores to like I think my first taste of performance, I guess, was playing in bands, rock bands. But then I also worked at a science center where I did like science kind of shows for kids, which is the closest thing to podcasting. Well, that's not true. Then I did like public radio stuff. My point is this: you think about an Abraham Lincoln, you think about him, you know, being the president, the guy on the five, you know, the guy with the stovepipe hat, the guy that, you know, in his own way, was very, very instrumental in liberating slaves.
Old more fans.
But,
it's a street
name. Exactly. Correct. Yeah. But you don't necessarily think of like, well, what about before that? You think he just kind of popped out fully formed as this like cartoon president. But he had some trials and tribulations and things that led him to that, you know, final result of being what he ultimately became. And it's not what you'd think, as is the case for all the others that we're going to talk through today. We've got a handful. It's kind of a fun grab bag episode about surprising former careers. And rather than tease all of them, let's just dive right into Lincoln. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it. And we hope this is inspiring. We also, we might make this a series. We're on the fence. We just found so much stuff. Here are a few. So Lincoln is now known, as you said, Noel, as a president of the United States. That's one of his big wins in history. If you ask the average person to name presidents throughout history, Lincoln's name will inevitably come up, often right after whomever the current president is. Everybody kind of knows about him. He's also well known outside of the U.S. And of course, people don't talk about Lincoln without talking about the Civil War and his assassination at the hands of John Wilkes Booth, right? Who said, "Thus to all tyrants." But back in the day, when he was just a young string bean, he was known less as presidential material and more as a professional wrestler. True story. That's his background, or that's part
of
his
background. He's a lanky man. He's a tall drink of water, that guy, which isn't typically what you would associate with a wrestler, but think about that reach, right? And those meat hooks, those bear claws. He could slap a man senseless with those hams.
Mm-hmm. He's got the reach for sure. And, you know, it's common for people in high levels of political power, at least in democracies, to have varied careers. There's a great study. I wanted to find it. I'll have to look for this after we record. There's this great study about the proportion of backgrounds for leaders in different countries. Like a lot of political leaders in the government of China came from an engineering background. A lot of political leaders in the U.S. come from a legal background, right? They are attorneys or they have clerked somewhere.
He was kind of a country boy, wasn't he? Like, I mean, he was really kind of a salt of the earth, you know, lived in a, maybe not a, well, there was the titular Lincoln log cabin, right? He did live in somewhat rustic surroundings, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he didn't have the best childhood. He moved around various parts of the U.S. heartland he was born in Kentucky, and he moved to Indiana and then to Illinois, mm-hmm. and his mom passed away when he was 9. It was rough, but he succeeded, despite the adversity, to become a super good wrestler. And this is real wrestling. They're actually grappling.
Yes. Sort of what you might consider like Olympic-style Greco-Roman wrestling, where you're like kind of on the ground, all pretzeled up with your opponent.
Yeah. And this, we should say, other presidents did have careers that might surprise you. James Garfield taught school. Grover Cleveland was a sheriff. Herbert Hoover was an engineer. But we chose Lincoln because of the wrestling. So what you would basically do with this isn't like the high production value wrestling that you see on pay-per-view. It's not like The Undertaker comes in with a song and all these props and stuff. No, this wrestling is when two guys enter the ring, they lock arms, they get the call to go, and they just try to throw the other guy to the ground. And Lincoln's mm-hmm. record is astonishing. 300 wins. He lost once. Who was that guy?
Do we know? Who was that guy? And what did he go on to do?
We didn't know until we got ready for this episode. Right. On April 22nd, 1832, future President Abraham Lincoln got his keister handed to him. He was thrown down twice in a row by a guy named Lorenzo Dow Thompson, Hank, to his friends. But every other time, Lincoln like dominated.
You know, it's funny. I actually was hanging out with Day, my girlfriend, and my kid last night. And I don't remember how it came up, but I just decided to like pull up like wrestling trash talk videos, like compilations. Because man, that is some fun theatrical shenanigans. Like The Rock, for example, I think he popularized calling people jabronis, you know, and yes. I believe candy ass, things like that. But he does this weird thing where he asks if people can smell what The Rock is cooking. I don't understand what that's a reference to. Is it a crack thing? Cooking rocks? What is he cooking? And why does he want people to smell it?
It's, you know, don't break your heart trying to overthink the mythology, man. Yeah. That's what... That's like when I found out The Undertaker didn't have superpowers. Mm-hmm. It's another confusing one, Austin 316.
There is no one. Isn't there not an Austin? Like, no, sorry. Of course, there's no Book of Austin.
it's John 316. It's John 316.
It's John 316. Yeah. And what is that? Do we know? We can find out.
It's supposed to be a flip of the chapter of the verse that says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." That's the King James Version. And I never understood the Austin 316 part.
Is he trying to appeal to Christians? Is that the deal? Like to the I don't know.
I feel like it's more something the fans started, not him. So, yeah, I don't get it either, but...
Okay, here we go.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, I found it. So, I'm not an expert on wrestling, so I was looking this up. Apparently, it dates back to 1996 King of the Ring event where Austin took the win by fighting a guy named Jake the Snake Roberts, who at the time was a born-again Christian. And so... So when Austin won, he mocked Roberts' newfound spiritual beliefs and then said, basically, I guess he said more like Austin 316, and the crowd went wild.
Oh, man. And I would like to submit an interpretive reading of the passage with a little twist. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish.
In a 20-foot steel octagon!
Right?
No, and 20 foot, that's not enough feet. I don't know how big an octagon ring is, but you get the idea. You get the sentiment.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Here's his exact quote, and then we'll get back to the actual show.
You sit there and thump your Bible and you say your prayers, but it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, "I just whipped your ass."
Yeah, you
did,
boy.
That's the exact
point. Yeah.
That's his.
Yeah.
Okay, Haas.
All this to say is that this stuff is captivating. You can talk trash about this kind of professional wrestling all you want, but when you really start digging into it, even like on a casual level, it's a lot of fun. And you know, of course, knowing full well that what we're talking about is completely theater, the stuff with Lincoln wasn't theater. I mean, that was like a real, feats of strength and competition, but that also contained a healthy amount of trash talking. And Lincoln, you know, compared to what we've just been going through, Lincoln's is a real doozy. And I would love to see a Lincoln-esque WWE wrestler that only spoke this flavor of trash talk. How did it go? He goes, I think there's one for each of us. "I'm the big buck of this lick. If any of you want to try it, come on and wet your horns."
Woo! Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, I want to see those reenactments. I want us to do a TV show and do this. So, and Lincoln could back up the trash talk. In 1992, almost 130 years after he is killed in Ford Theater, the National Wrestling Hall of Fame adds him. And he is actually not the only U.S. president who is in the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. There are three others. Teddy Roosevelt, that makes sense, Rough Riders, William Howard Taft, and George Washington. Lincoln, by the way, is only like 21 when he becomes the wrestling champion of the county. We do know a little bit about his notable matches. And he was living kind of wild. You know what I mean? If social media was around, this would have come up. His lifestyle would have come up in the debates.
I think that's right, Ben. I think that's definitely right. But thankfully, all we have... I'm sorry, Ben. I thought there was another quote of his that that you could do a reading of, but I think there was only that one. I even went and looked further, but that really is the one that rises to the top of Lincoln wrestling history. But again, to your point, we probably have a whole hell of a lot more than that. If only there were smartphones and Twitters back then. But alas, we'll just have to imagine the other amazing gems that Lincoln would have come out with in the ring.
Yeah, and he had those opportunities, ample opportunities to talk some smack. We wanted to note two other of Lincoln's matches. This is, by the way, before he has the iconic beard and hat. And I'm just going to give you a heads up, folks. If you have known the guy only through the pictures of him with the beard, Get ready for something different. He doesn't look bad. It's really surprising. Anyway, so
it's like when Alex Trebek shaved his mustache. I think it took all of us aback.
Or it's like when you meet a little kid for the first time, if you're wearing a hat and then you're not wearing a hat. This happens with dogs sometimes too. They're like, who is
object
this
permanence
imposter?
Exactly. Yeah,
very much so. So Lincoln has to fight this guy named Jack Armstrong. Jack Armstrong has a posse. He is in charge of this gang, basically, called Clara's Grove Boys. And they're known throughout New Salem, Illinois, as these guys who show up to the county to drink, talk trash, and play around. And Armstrong heard, hey, this Lincoln kid is a beast in the wrestling ring. And Armstrong took that as a challenge. So he went to fight Lincoln, and Lincoln won.
Yep, and we don't really have any specifics on how that match went down, but we know that Lincoln wrestled for 12 years total before moving on, and after that became much more of a military man, and obviously began to dabble in politics, which began at the tender age of 23. So he must have gotten his start wrestling. Yeah, he was a teenager. I mean, I think there was a little bit of crossover between the wrestling Lincoln and the military / political Lincoln.
Yeah. So after he has this match with Armstrong, he knocks Armstrong around and ultimately knocks Armstrong out. But they become friends. And because he's friends with the leader of Clary's Grove Boys, he gets fewer challenges. And this is still thought of as his most impressive win ever. His second one we already talked about, which is the when he loses to Hank Thompson. He does this, as you noted, during military service. He's a volunteer in the 1832 Black Hawk War. And then he wrestles for 12 more years. As we noted, he's still wrestling when he gets into politics at the age of 23. He runs for the Illinois General Assembly, and I guess at least partially based on his fame as a wrestler, and he wins. He gets elected, and from that point on, he says, okay, I got to focus just on politics.
You know, it's really interesting because he is kind of a president who started his career as an entertainer in some way, shape, or form. Again, it wasn't the same as like The Rock and all that, but it definitely is a form of entertainment that he was making money and he got a reputation, and that largely led to his early successes in politics. So it kind of a crossover in some ways to the next fellow on our list.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I gotta say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A background in entertainment, a future in politics. Who does that remind you of, folks? It's old Dutch. Ronald Reagan, a.k.a. the Gipper. Had a lot of street names. He was...
Win one for the Gipper. And I die. Yes. Mm-hmm. Famous. Look it up.
So Dutch also has a past in Illinois. He's 9 years old when the Reagan family moves to Dixon. And he loved Dixon. He would later look back on this and I think view it through rose-colored glasses. He thought it was a bucolic, simpler time. He would reference it as sort of a Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer experience.
Ew.
And he, yeah.
Where you could trick a man into painting your fence and other antiquated notions that have not aged well.
Racism was just fine. There's also an excellent...
It's okay.
Series of theses I've read about this. It was a great, gosh, I'm going to have to find the scholar, but there was this great piece I read theorizing that Huckleberry Finn is actually meant to be a black person, is meant to not be white. And it's a close reading of the text, but I'm going to find that one too. It's fascinating. Anyway,
I'd never heard
that. Reagan wasn't thinking. Yeah, Reagan isn't thinking in that depth. He is, as we said, he's looking at these rose-colored glasses. He's not acknowledging the very problematic stuff about Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer. And I liked your impression there. Reagan himself is kind of a milquetoasty kid, you know? He's got Milhouse vibes. He's got Milhouse vibes is what it is.
Bit of a goldfish, you know what I mean? Yeah. Sort of a surface swimmer who has a very short memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was skinny. He was a slender build. He was shy. He had thick glasses. He wasn't the best student. And things changed when he reached his teenage years. When he was 15, he got a summer job that he, like, for him, changed his life, or at least his view of himself.
Yeah, got a summer job and a six-pack. Around 15, became a lifeguard, real Baywatch-type character, at the Lowell Park on Rock River. And there's a, you know, somewhat questionable in terms of the exact details, but it's sort of like a formative backstory. It's like a, you know, superhero origin story in some ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He got more confidence, right? Because he was in a position of authority and responsibility, and he would throw rocks at people, pebbles, really, to get them to leave the water when his shift was over. Across seven different summers, he actually saved 77 people from drowning. And he talks about this a lot in interviews. He also, there's a funny anecdote. Keep in mind, a lot of this is curated and presented to voters, right? He's talking about this in the realm of politics to seem more likable. The story goes, according to Helen Lawton, that one time a guy had been swimming and came up to Reagan, Dutch, and said, "Hey, I've lost my false teeth and I can't find them." So Reagan dives in repeatedly until he finds the false teeth, and the guy is very happy, gives him $10. And then, according to Reagan, this is a quote from Reagan, "That was the first time I was ever paid for doing anything."
Wait, so he was just like volunteering as a lifeguard?
I guess so, yeah. He's just saving people for free.
Can I just...
he really is a real Milhouse right there.
Oh, man, goodness. Can I just posit to you fellas, 77 saves, huh? But also known for pelting people with rocks. Right. Wondering if it was one of those like weird supervillain moves where you orchestrate the crimes and then you solve them order to look like the hero.
Yeah, like an arsonist who works at the fire department.
Right.
I gotcha. So, yeah, that part might be lost to history.
I think so. There seems like a whole lot of potential drownings in a very short span of time.
If I had to guess, this is something that was said very much on the campaign trail and something that really no one could probably confirm nor deny. And so thus no one would really go after it, and it would make him look really good in the campaign trail.
Well, I do like that somebody got elected when he got elected president. Somebody, hopefully in Illinois, was like, "That guy used to throw rocks at me."
Exactly.
But they didn't have an Instagram.
Did we mention the caveat, though, that locals joke that this is a Chicago Tribune article. Locals joke that at least a few of those were young women who faked their distress to be rescued by the handsome lifeguard.
Ooh la la, we didn't like
it. My gracious. It was a bit of a smoke show, it's true.
Yeah, you can see Reagan now is transforming to a more physically active person, this young lifeguard, and he gets involved in sports. He actually goes to Eureka College on a partial football scholarship. It doesn't pay for everything, so he gets his second job that you might not expect. He is the dishwasher at his fraternity house. And just knowing the hierarchy of fraternities, that feels like it's a rough gig. You know what I mean? Like, "Hey, Dutch, we're done here, buddy. Keep scrubbing. We got to go to the sock hop."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I better be able to see my butt in those pans.
Exactly. And you shine like the top of the Chrysler building. It is funny. It is a bit of a hazing kind of gig. But he raised himself up by his bootstraps and became a, in 1932, a, I guess, semi-professional radio sportscaster at WOC in Davenport. No, he was out of college by then. This was not, I mean, you know, he was paid. It was professional. Didn't pay much. They paid him $10 a game, which is $174 by today's standards, which is still, I mean, these sports ball games are quite long, if I'm not mistaken, right? So $174 for a game. That's it's not a lot of scratch.
Well, it's like a lot of work. 3.5-4 hours, probably with setup and breakdown, about 5-6 hours.
Yeah
so that's like basically minimum wage.
If it's 5 hours and it's $174 a game, he's making it the equivalent of $34.80 an hour.
Oh, an
which
hour.
Isn't bad.
No, that's pretty good. Sorry. You're better at math than me, Ben. I was late on the draw on the calculator. But yeah, $30 an hour. The
calculator's
like,
good.
Yeah, exactly. I blame the calculator. That's a decent starting wage, you know, for a young fella fresh out of college. But he
would have been a podcaster.
Exactly. He set his sights higher, though, to greater things in 1937 when he enlisted in the Army Reserves as a private. But, you know, through stick-to-itiveness and pluck, he was promoted to second lieutenant and joined the Officers Reserve Corps of the Cavalry.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is where he is discovered by Hollywood.
Yeah.
An agent for Warner Brothers just sees Reagan in the wild in L.A. and says, I want to give you a 7-year contract. Very Faustian. Reagan says yes, and he goes on to have a pretty storied film career. He gets his nickname, the Gipper, which he really leaned into later in life, because of a film in 1940 where he plays a Notre Dame football legend, a guy named George Gipp. So the Gipper is a nickname based on a role he played. It's like if Keanu Reeves became president and people called him Neo.
Yeah, this is the iconic scene that I was describing at the beginning of the show, beginning of the segment. Win one for the Gipper. That's the line. You should watch the movie. It's very, very dated, but it is kind of a trip seeing, you know, Mr. War on Drugs acting in the pictures.
Mm-hmm. And you can see him in multiple other films. In 1942, he goes to active duty. He's called in by the Air Force, and he is assigned to get this, the first motion picture unit in Culver City, California. What does he do there? He makes training films, over 400. Cool. This is an old dream of mine. I've always wanted to make workplace films for like HR and safety training. I don't want to be the bad guy, though. I want to be like either the cameo character who's like, what are we going to do?
Strickland would be the bad guy.
What's that? Strickland's
going to be the bad guy.
Let's just make one. Let's just make one.
I have watched so many Centron and Cornette and Encyclopedia Britannica films over these last 2 years that I think I can make one very well right now.
I like a good project. And it's funny how those, I don't know how it works exactly, if you license these for your corporation or whatever, and you just kind of keep using the old one until it becomes so dated that it doesn't even, like, you know, pass legal muster anymore. But we, through various acquisitions of our company, have seen varying so shades many of these types of sexual harassment training or, you know, workplace decor or what have you. And there's a certain set of skills that goes into making these. Not exactly high art, but definitely a functional form of filmmaking.
Yeah, we're going to, okay, that's it. I'm going to get my sketch comedy crew together.
Yeah.
You guys, and we're going to make these. Tell us what you want to see, folks. So this is all before Ronald Reagan ever becomes the president of the United States. After the war, he gets out of those training films. He gets out of that gig and he starts acting again. It's around 1945. And for 20 years, he is a working actor. He's got one made-for-TV movie and then 53 motion pictures. And then later, this dishwasher, this lifeguard, this star of Air Force training films goes on to become the president. And like you said, Max, he talks about, we have to be careful with what people talk about on the campaign trail, you know? And it might seem like we're being too nice to Lincoln and maybe a little unfair to Reagan, but again, we pointed out Lincoln was a trash-talking wrestler, and if he had a wrestling clip, if television had been around back then, and we had a clip of him talking trash, we most certainly would have played it.
No doubt.
Today's not just... I'm having fun with this. Today's not just about the surprising career of some dudes. We had to add someone else in the mix, right?
We did. Legal sent us a memo. It was a required. No, I'm kidding. This is another great one, and I love. I think we both love old Hollywood and these types of stories, and the backstories of the people who would become icons, because they're often pretty relatable and puts things in a little bit of a different perspective. Marilyn Monroe is one of the most iconic of icons, like untouchable, just like Mufasa in the sky in The Lion King. I mean, she looks down upon all of us and gives a wry little smile. But her backstory is even weirder and crazier and turned me on to a concept I didn't even know existed. The age of early drones in World War II? What?
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's cool.
I just remember. It was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something,
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. Like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man, and funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth, and while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avila Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. Marilyn Monroe, before she became the iconic Marilyn Monroe, was named Norma Jean Dougherty, and she was 18 years old. She was working a crazy amount of hours, 10 hours a day, $20 a week in a World War II defense plant. She had a husband, a United States merchant seaman assigned overseas, and the company she worked for, Radioplane in Burbank, California, made these small remote controlled pilotless aircraft target practice kind of for the U.S. Army and the Navy. And it might surprise people to know just how old drone technology is. Under a code name, Operation Aphrodite, radio-controlled bombers were packed with explosives and flown into the air by these Allied pilots who would just eject once their plane reached a target. And this is pretty nuts. Insane. Because Dougherty is... Her job specifically is to inspect and spray parachutes.
I mean, it's interesting because you hear the word drones and you think about, you know, automated aerial vehicles that can target, you know, with precision or whatever. This was kind of the opposite. It was aerial vehicles that were controlled remotely, but that were actually used for target practice, right? Or it was a way of kind of like simulating mission circumstances. So Miss Dougherty, actually, her job was to inspect and spray those parachutes that you were describing, Ben, in a factory in Burbank, California. And it's funny because her mother-in-law actually warned her. She had gotten her the job in the first place, or at least was her connection. She was a nurse working for Radioplane, said that the fumes in the factory would do a number on her beautiful hair. Not to mention, perhaps, you know, inhaling them would not be great for her health. So she essentially was an assembly line worker, and she did her job and eventually actually won kind of like a office pool kind of situation where she got a $50 war bond after being elected voted by her peers the queen of the company picnic.
Nice.
That's fun.
That's fun, yeah. And let's fast forward to June. The Allies are still fighting against Japanese forces, and that's when Norma Jean is photographed. She is holding up a propeller, and you can see her Radioplane ID on her waist. And the guy who takes this photograph, Private David Conover of... get this, the Army's first motion picture unit in Culver City, California. Sound familiar, Reagan fans? He takes this picture of Norma Jean.
Reaganites.
Yeah, using color film, which is pretty rare at the time. And he is there to get some propaganda going. He needs to get pictures of women in war production. Things that will be publicized, saying some version of, everyone's doing their part. Join up today. And... This picture and several other pictures are one of the things that establish her in Hollywood. She's very photogenic and she starts becoming well-known. She takes the stage name Marilyn Monroe, and interesting little quirk of history here, thanks to the good folks at the New York Times, we know this, the commanding officer who told the private to take that photograph, none other than Captain Ronald Reagan.
How about that? Yeah, that's wild. It's also interesting, too. I mean, it makes sense because this was the era of, like, you know, Rosie the Riveter, We Can Do It, and all that stuff. And, like, the government making sort of a PR play out of women, you know, stepping in to do the jobs that their husbands had done previously. So it's sort of a mixed bag, because on the one hand, it is kind of cool and empowering in a way, but it's also sort of like, we'll just hold down the fort while the men are away, you know, and then when they return, potentially go back to, you know, our subservient roles. But I think this actually did cause kind of a, you know, a sea change in what jobs women were considered for, in a way. I mean, it certainly wasn't some sort of like glass ceiling shattering moment, but I think it did to some degree move things forward,
agreed, you
know, at least in a small way.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's inarguable. It's simply a fact that World War II would not have been won by the Allies if women in the population weren't part of the war effort. To say otherwise really diminishes the crucial role they played. And, oh, that's an episode in its of itself. We should do a special series on just the 1950s post-war economic boom, and then training videos.
Totally.
We'll do both of those.
Can I say really quickly, speaking of like upcoming topics, we've started doing a new thing where we have a weekly call with super producer Max and research associates Zach and Jeff. And good heavens, we've got like 60 incredible topics that I think you all are going to enjoy so very much. And it's just become like, I think the highlight of all of our weeks is getting together, or, you know, whenever we do these, I think we do like about once a month. But I am so excited about some of the show topics we have coming up. Mm-hmm. Ben, I don't know about you.
Yeah, very excited. And we're going to have some special guests coming for all the TDZ fans. Stay tuned. And no spoilers, but what's your favorite reality TV show, folks? Keep that answer in mind for some upcoming shows.
What even is reality, Ben?
I don't know.
Understand.
I don't. It's funny that they call it reality TV in the first place. But let's get back to Norma Jean and Private Conover. Conover is so taken with Norma Jean that he ends up taking leave from the Army Air Corps, and he spends 2 weeks with her taking photos and teaching her how to pose for the camera. This leads to her signing with something called the Blue Book Modeling Agency in 1945. At this point, she was sometimes started calling herself Jean Norman before she gets to Marilyn Monroe. This photographer, Conover, has to go to the Philippines. He's called to duty in the Philippines. They lose contact, and her career begins to take off in 1953. And that's when he learns, this guy Conover, he's like, oh, wait, that's the lady I took all those photos of. I taught her to model. Now her name is Marilyn Monroe. And talking about being a stand-up person, I didn't know this. Noel, Max, Marilyn Monroe spent her whole life crediting her success, a large part of it, to Private Conover. And they even met again on the set of a film you might have heard of, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. I can't say that in a not somewhat sleazy voice.
No, there's no way. There's absolutely no way to do it. I think that's pretty neat, because she didn't have to do that. And it's not like, I mean, honestly, he just sort of did a kindness. It's not like he gave her her big break or anything exactly, but he just helped her kind of find that path. Again, like we're talking about at the top of the show, sometimes little choices you make and people you encounter can lead you to surprising places that you never would have expected. And I think it's important to be grateful for the people that you encounter in your life that help you along that path, even if it's not like, oh, you gave me my first job, or you broke my career, or this, that, and the other. Just people who you learn from and who are, you know, kind to you and give you the time and attention. Because as you always say, Ben, time is the most valuable commodity that anyone has.
It's the only real currency in the end. I do want to shout out super producer Max Williams, who, Max, you came through and you pulled up, you found the image that we're talking about from the drone company. And it's recognizably Marilyn Monroe. You popped it here in the chat, without blonde hair yet, and looking very much, honestly, I'll say it, looking like it's kind of in a training video. She looks like a scientist working in a video about how to put propellers on properly.
But I mean, without all that glam and the makeup and the blonde, she's almost unrecognizable.
Yeah, you see the the iconic appearance really start to surface when she gets modeling gigs. They start out as advertisements in stuff for men's magazines, but her agency, Blue Book Modeling, decides, you know, they're talking to her and they're saying, you know, Norma Jean, you have less of a figure for a fashion model and more of a figure of a pinup, which sounds not super great, maybe, right? Hearing that in the modern day. But they're telling her basically she has the wrong body to be a fashion model. And modeling itself mm-hmm. can be such a brutal industry. But the founder of Blue Book,
totally.
Yeah, the founder, Miss Emmeline Snively, which sounds like a bad guy in a children's book.
Boy, does it ever. Like, you're going to tie Penelope Pitstop to the train tracks?
I know, right? She is actually not an evil children's book figure. She introduces Norma Jean to Hollywood, to the movie industry. And that's where her career takes off and how she becomes the Marilyn Monroe people know today. And it's interesting that for so long, Monroe was treated as a stereotypical, like she was treated as a stereotypical kind of ditzy person or a dumb blonde character. But looking at her life, at this individual's life, you can see that she was incredibly intelligent, right? And that stereotype is undeserved. It's just nuts because you have to be pretty sharp to work at a drone factory, right?
Yeah, you do. I mean, it's not, I mean, you know, it's repetitive work, but it's not mindless work. And there are lots of moving parts and things that could be messed up. And you have to know your business. I wanted to bring something up, Ben. You mentioned, you know, the idea of, oh, you got the body for a pinup or whatever, and the kind of problematic nature of that kind of thing. I watched the first Pink Panther movie yesterday on streaming with my girlfriend, and I saw a funny thing. You know how before movies come on, they have those like warnings for different content things that you should, you know, look out for. Mm-hmm. This one had one, and sometimes they're like abbreviated. It'll be like, you know, strong sexual content might be like SSC. This one said OC, and that stands for outdated cultural references.
Wow, that's kind of, I think you need to be a little more specific. Yeah. Wow. Outdated cultural references.
Well, exactly, because that's the thing. First of all, the very first scene in the Pink Panther movie is in like a kind of a harem type situation in an East Indian palace kind of situation. And so that's handled with a good bit of cultural insensitivity. But the thing that was really kind of a lot was there's this part where this dude is making advances on this woman, and he essentially breaks into her room under false pretenses and just throws himself at her. And she's just so docile about it, just like kind of like pushing him off, but also like mainly just being like, oh, no, I can't right now because excuses. But like, it's just the most gross kind of Me Too thing I've ever seen. It was really hard to watch.
Pepe Le Pew, man.
Very much that. Very much that.
And this takes us to another conversation, different things we're going to explore in future episodes. We have tons of other trivia that we haven't gotten to. Lincoln right now remains the only U.S. president to have obtained a patent. So go you, Abe, you know, in addition to being president, that's a cool thing. And here, you know, no. We were kind of on the fence about this before we went into this episode, but I think this is a series. I think we can do more surprising former careers of notable public figures.
I completely agree. Maybe we'll workshop like what the official title of the series is. We've got a bit of a history of introducing series and then just kind of abandoning them. But hey, it's our prerogative. But no, I love this one. I think there's so many more. We did one with about like weird presidential pets. You know, that one was mm-hmm. fun. But no, there's gold in them hills in terms of like weird jobs that people that were known for one major thing have done in their lives. I think we need to dig deeper into this topic.
Like legendary breakdancer Joan of Arc, you know, the inventor of the worm.
Totally. She could. I was about to say her worm was unparalleled, right. And then you reminded me that it was in fact her very invention, likely, you know, driven by the word of God.
Yeah, she got into that part later. Also, sorry to Kane Hendry, who's considered the creator of the worm. But we have more surprising former careers ahead. We can't wait to hear your thoughts, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be back later in the week with some more surprising, ridiculous history. In the meantime, thanks, of course, to Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to composer Alex Williams. Noel, thanks to you. I'd also like to personally thank my old colleagues in the world of international affairs, some of whom listen to this podcast. So that's where I ended up, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We have other people to thank. Do you think Jonathan Strickland will be okay with being the villain in our training videos?
I mean, he's sort of the heel of the show. You know, if he was a wrestler, he'd be the heel. He'd also be the villain. I mean, we don't have to let him make him like sexually harass anybody. Or anything, but he can at the very least try to encourage somebody to do something that's like morally reprehensible pins. In the workplace.
So I got the idea. Have you guys ever seen the training video, safety video, Shake Hands with Danger?
Yes.
No, but I know that like these kinds of institutional films were sometimes done by big directors early in their career. I think that's one of them, right?
I'm not sure about that, but that is a very, and I think it's Herc Harvey. I think it's like one of his last credited ones. But it is just like, yeah. It's like a horror film. It is so Christ. Bad. It's like tighten this thing or it's going to rip your arm off and stuff like that. I'm thinking more kind of like Strickland can be like the guy who like it, like cuts the corner on some safety video and then gets some absolutely horrific results come to him. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I love it. He's our Dudley Don't, Max. I also, in full disclosure, have a long history with casting Jonathan in villainous roles. When I was heading up our video department, I would consistently go to him and make him the villain. So Jonathan, if you're listening, thank you again. You're amazing on camera. Would love to cast you in some other stuff. And I hope that it's okay, because I'm just now realizing you were almost always the villain. My bad.
And just to double back really quickly, Herc Harvey, who directed Shake Hands with Danger, also directed one of your favorite movies, Ben, Carnival of Souls, in the early 60s, and then went on to do some of these institutional films. But there are a handful of directors that have some of those on their IMDBs that maybe they wish would get wiped off.
Yeah, and to even triple back on this, if you want to learn more about Herc Harvey, check out his episode that we did on Ephemeral, where we go from early to Carnival Souls till afterwards, like stuff like Shake Hands with Danger and stuff.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Great rec.
Beautiful.
In the meantime, huge thanks to Super Producer Max Williams, as always. Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Christopher Asiotis here in spirit.
Yes. And thanks to Yves Jeffcoat. Thanks to Gabe Lousier. Thanks to our research associates, Jeff Bartlett and Zach Williams. No relation. Have a great week, folks.
We'll see you next time.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.